your hosts from the NYC, Kurt Bauer. From Compton, Quebec, Mr. San La.
Orgullosamente Latino hasta la muerte y después. Worldwide Latino pride, the ambassadors of violence.
What's good, everyone? I'm Kurt Bauer. He's Mr. Saint Laurent. And somewhere in the background is Conan. But you're not going to hear from him in a few moments because, well, he might not be into the Lord of the Rings, but right now my man is reloading an enormous wizard pipe that would no doubt have Gandalf envious of this mystical contraption. So, as Conan gets his shit good, let me take a moment to remind you to hit us with the realness on Twitter. I'm at Kurt Bauer. Raggedy Andy is at MSL Universe. Major League Wrestling and MLW Radio at MLW. And last but not least, Carlos the Faded Wizard, a.k.a. Conan, is at Conan5150. That out of the way, K-Dog has reloaded, so let's get deep into shit, starting with some mailbag. MSL, take us away.
Who is the biggest shit stirrer you've ever been around in the business?
Conan.
Without a doubt, Teddy Hart.
I think that was Court's answer.
That was my answer.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
I can embrace that. Yeah, that's who it is.
Teddy's a great one. I mean, I don't know if it's by design or just out of just the moment, but he seems to be very consistent with creating chaos wherever he goes, and he's kind of like a mad dog. He just goes and chases something, and there's really no thought, just goes into whatever it is, for better or for worse. So, you know, that's Teddy.
How about you?
My answer was Teddy, but since you named it first, I feel like I have to think of another one, but it's like... I feel like Teddy is head and shoulders above everyone else I've dealt with.
I would say, you know, Bruce Prichard was a pretty big shit stirrer. He would love to just bury people just to see people get fired. He got off on that WWE. He used to love stooging on guys and saying shit just to get him in trouble. He didn't give a fuck. Even if he drank with you the night before, he would try to. He had no problem fucking throwing you under the bus. And that's a different type of shit stirrer. That to me is a malicious, nasty son of a bitch that does that. And a pretty fucking cruel type of person. And I saw him do that to a lot of people.
Who's this?
Bruce Prichard.
Ah, yeah. Fuck that motherfucker.
This next question is from Brandon. He says, what are your guys' thoughts on the Insane Clown Posse in wrestling? It seems like everywhere they went, they were always super over with the fans. Why do you think they were popular? Conan, what was it like working with ICP, and how were they perceived in the locker room?
Well, I worked with them in WCW, and I worked with them in TNA. In WCW, you had so many fucking big egos. Everybody's like, who the fuck are these guys? And they were cool, you know, with me. They used to – they didn't like that. I remember specifically they didn't like the Fly. So they were always like – they were like on a bus. They would go everywhere on a bus. I think really, especially in TNA, I remember them a lot more. In TNA, really what it was is the Juggalos, they would follow them everywhere. So wherever – you know, all the Juggalos in Nashville and the fucking surrounding areas would come out there and support them. But in TNA, for some reason, not so much in WCW, but they were like – really violent white boys, like kind of trailer park, white trash white boys, but like really violent. Like, I don't know if they were in gangs or they whatever, but they were really violent. They were trying to start fights with the crowd and shit like that. You know, they just have like a chip on their shoulder. You know, they were never disrespectful to me. In TNA, they were a little bit more respected because TNA wasn't as big as WCW. That's all I remember about them. They're always cool with me. Were you there? Didn't they go to WWE once?
Yeah, they were there way before my time. I mean, when I was running Major League Wrestling, I remember they were like, Vamp tried to get them involved and stuff, and they would literally just like pay for their own way down. They just wanted, they loved wrestling and just wanted to be on a show. But for whatever reason, scheduling or whatever, it never worked out. I knew that it would be like a nice thing to have them there because forget what they do in the ring, forget everything else, they would bring in a large audience. They would just, like you said, travel like Grateful Dead style or Fish. They would just travel across country following ICP with whatever they were doing, super supportive. So to me, if I could, you know, if I, you know, I was in the business of selling tickets. That was like the revenue stream. So if you can guarantee, you know, whether it's 250, 500, whatever amount of tickets it was, that was good for me.
And the thing that I respect about them is like they had sent me a video once and, you know, they were doing the gimmick with like the grape soda and shit.
Yes.
And, you know, fucking everybody's going nuts for them. And all the people that they that come to their concerts or like that 3-day Juggalo Fest that they have where I got to put them super over because they give a lot of the boys work,
right.
You know, and they'll put on like these fucking battle royals just for guys that can't work anymore. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, they pay homage to wrestling and you know, I got nothing but love for them because of that. And like I said, you know, they've always been super cool with me.
Court, I don't even know if you realize this. There was an MLW show in Fort Lauderdale, and I don't know if maybe ICP had mentioned to people that they wanted to be on the show or if rumors just came out that they were going to be there since they always showed up in new wrestling companies. But there was definitely an MLW show in Fort Lauderdale where the Juggalos thought ICP was going to be there.
Yeah.
And there was like a pocket of Juggalos in the bleachers. Probably about 50 of them all in their own little section, all painted up. And I, MLW at that time kind of had more of a hardcore flavor to it, which I think was what the ICP fans are into. But yeah, man, they can draw a crowd even if people think they might show up or just are hoping they'll show up.
Well, Vamp probably put it out there or something that they might show up.
And
we didn't seal the deal or whatever. We never promoted them or anything, but... yeah, I mean, that's right what I'm talking about. They have like a real fierce following and they'll support them and check them out and do anything and whatever with them. And I mean, I guess they're still doing projects with guys like Greg Valentine and Scott.
Well, they've
Hall
got
and
they've
Vamp.
Got a new TV show coming out and Vamp's on it, Scott's
right.
on it.
Yeah, I mean, one of my friends actually is a producer on that show, and he was sending me pictures of like Greg Valentine's dressed with like Liberace or some shit on the show,
yeah.
wearing a glittering outfit, and he has this picture with the fucking Greg, and Valentine just looks completely fucked up in the pit. Not like he's drunk or fucked up, but it just like looks retarded. You know, he looks goofy as hell in it.
But what TV show is this, Em?
They're gonna have their own show on Fuse, which is one of the music networks.
Right.
And I don't know too much about it. I looked into it a little bit when I found out Scott was going to be on it. I think it's basically them watching music videos and making fun of them the way Beavis and Butthead used to.
Right.
But like kind of like Mystery Science Theater, like they're you see them like watching the screen from the from in the theater, just I guess goofing on music videos. I don't know what Scott and Vamp do on it, but I'll watch it and let you guys know.
Now, what happened to Scott? He obviously ain't at that accountability crib anymore, right?
I don't know if he's there or not because don't you guys remember that like Vamp was in New York or something trying to get a hold of Court? Whenever that was when the show was being filmed. So it might have been filmed many months ago.
It was like that was a few weeks ago, actually. It was like maybe 3 weeks ago. And I know I heard that Scott Hall has been spending time like in South Beach or something. So I don't know what's going on.
I'm under the impression that Scott plans to move to Atlanta, but he might be back down in Florida right now. I'm not sure. I don't want to start any rumors. I don't pay that much attention to it, but I'm under the impression that maybe Jake was starting to slip up a little bit, and so Scott didn't want to be there if Jake was off track. I'm not exactly sure what's going down.
Yeah, neither am I.
All right, next question. What is each of your opinions on the CMLL Luchador Rush?
He looks like a fag. But he's a good wrestler.
Who is the worst female talent you have ever worked with or been around?
I will say that was Sunny. In terms of talent, she had exceptional talent. In terms of attitude, one of the worst I've ever been around. She just was a slob, a complete unprofessional individual. She was bad for the locker room. She did one show, and I never wanted her back. We had plans to keep her and Candido on as a regular featured talent in the company, but after one show, I was one and done with them. And the only other one it wasn't because of like interaction between myself and her, but Stacy Keibler at the time when I was at WWE, she was on her way out. So she had a lot of static with Vince at the time. I think it was because of getting a cut of her outside deals, which I think she was like Dancing with the Stars at the time, something like that. But she was very difficult to work with. She was kind of uncooperative. She came to everything late. She really bitched if things dragged out, if you needed, Vince wanted another take. And, you know, it's just, but at the same time, I look at the situation she was in. She was pissed at Vince. And, you know, working in that environment, they are super demanding. And she was, you know, starting to become accustomed to a much more glamorous, posh existence with, you know, sitting, you know, in a trailer or backstage with your own private VIP locker room and being catered to with Dancing with the Stars and anything else she was involved with. So that was probably like, why the fuck am I going through this shit? They're not treating me great anyway. And now they're telling me I got to do another fucking pre-tape when, you know, they don't appreciate what I'm, you know. She's just, you know, I just think it was just like that transition. And I happened to be like right there for it, and it wasn't very pleasant. But, you know, looking back, I kind of get why it was what it was.
I feel kind of bad that we've been taking a lot of shots at Sunny, and I'm not sure if she's one of Teddy's escorts or if she's the old lady he helped across the street. But she was always nice to me. I never had to work with her or for her or have her work for me. Maybe that would have changed my thoughts. Conan, your thoughts. A female talent, the worst one you've ever worked with.
Again, I can't think right now. I think I'm so fucking high, I can't remember shit. But, yeah, we'll have go to the next one.
Who was the biggest fake you were around in WCW? DDP, Hogan, Flair?
The biggest what?
The biggest fake.
So, meaning like what? Like that he wasn't... He was like two-faced or what?
Yeah, I'd say two-faced.
I would imagine be like, you know, hey, what's up, buddy? And then fuck
either
you.
That or whoever had like the most fake hips or something. No, probably phony.
What?
I would say, you know, all three of them. Really, all three of them.
From one to three, number one being the number one.
I think maybe DDP. I think he has changed though, but DDP number two. Would be fuck. He wasn't really fake with me, but he was so fake with so many other people. But I would have to say number two, Flair, and then Hogan. And believe me, all three of them, you know, had a good. But if I had to put them in that order, that you know, with me personally, I would say one, two, three, like that.
Did you? How was like Heenan backstage and dealing with Heenan? I mean, like he was. I never dealt with him.
He was super cool.
Super easy going,
super cool.
Cool,
yeah.
He had an interesting rep because it's like, if you talk to like old school, like late 80s, mid 80s WWF people, a lot of them hated the guy. They thought he was like a stooge for Vince and everything. They hate, you talk to some of those guys, they fucking have venom for Heenan. And like, for me, I never worked around, but it seems like so many people... especially from like the 90s have such and 90s and on have such a positive kind of like the Gene Okerlund thing. He's like super easy, super cool. But I always thought that was kind of weird that he had like that kind of.
Well, you know, it's like anything else, man. I mean, if you compare how you were, or who you were from 5 or 10 years ago, I'm sure you've made positive changes because we all want to get better and evolve and be better people. Like when I first broke into the business, I was very, very, very. I mean, cocky, and to the point that it turned a lot of people off. But I was already like that before I got into wrestling. Wrestling didn't make me like that, you know. Coming from where I came from, that was a big part of who you were, your bravado, and you know, I got this and I got that, and look, motherfucker, this and that. So I'd already came in like that, and then getting fame so quickly and set at such an early age, where now they don't just know me, you know. Around my block, I'm known throughout the whole fucking country, you know, and all the perks that come with it.
Right.
You know, I was very hard to deal with. You know, if you look at old pictures of mine, which I know you guys always have a great time looking at, I always used to wear like these three finger rings and these big ass chains. And one of the chains, I actually got the idea from Hector Camacho because he used to be like one of my favorite boxers. And Hector had a chain around his neck. It was all gold, and it looked like a mini license plate, you know. And mine said Conan, and it had like sapphires and rubies and emeralds in them. And you know, I had three finger ring that had the same type of stones, and I was very fucking flashy, and I was always flossing and very gaudily dressed. And it was almost like, look at me, you know, fuck, I got cheese and I'm the man and all that. And now I'm so very unpretentious. I mean, very rare that you even know who I am unless you really take a good look at me. But so you never know. I mean, Bobby could have been a stooge and a dick. And then when he got the WCW, he fucking chilled out. You know what I'm saying? Because when he was there, he was really chilly. And Gene Oakland was the man.
Yeah, he is the man. There's, I mean, yeah. I've never worked with Gene, unfortunately. I would have loved to. But yeah, I loved Mean Gene is the man. I mean, it's just awesome. He's like they talk about like guys. There's not like another Mean Gene in the business now. He was like that older, you know, like he'd be like the cool ass uncle, man. He just,
yeah,
you know,
right.
You know what I mean? That's the kind right. of guy he was.
Definitely, and he, you know. And not only that, he had that cool-ass voice.
Yes.
Because that's his voice. He doesn't have to fucking use any fucking anything, you know. And he always had great stories. He had like a kind of a witty, dry sense of humor. He had a lot of good one-liners, a lot of great stories. He wasn't afraid to tell Hogan what time it was. And, you know, like he had he had this thing called – I don't know. I think it was called Mean Gene Burgers.
Yes.
And it was like a hamburger joint that he opened up in the West Coast. So, boom, me being from the West Coast, you know, he called me up. And it was in some place like, I want to say, Phoenix maybe. And we were driving like from the hotel to this place. And, dude, he was just getting fucking hammered. And I do mean hammered in the limo. And we were just drinking and just having a good time. And I was like, fuck, man, this is the shit I like about wrestling, you know. He was just so laid back. He was like, hey, you better be on the limo at this time or you got to do this. And it was just show up, do your shit. People just want to hear you do your Arriba La Raza shit. And we went back and we fucking drank some more. But he was just a fucking cool, fucking chilly white dude.
Yeah. One of my highlights of just working at WWE was just having a good time and being able to drink with me and Gene was like, okay, that's good. I'm happy now, man.
Yeah, he ain't afraid to drink either.
Oh,
let me tell you
that dude is a bottomless pit. Bottomless pit.
He ain't afraid.
No, dude. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, and he just, for a little guy, that dude fucking has a fucking tolerance level, man. Fuck.
Mailbag at MLW.com is the way to get your questions in. We'll continue on. And the next question is, hello, handsome. I'm your neighbor. I am delightful. My pick's here. I think that might be spam. Next question. What do you think of Santo's injury in his weekly record column? El Hijo del Santo explains he was hurt so much by L.A. Park, he had surgery to his intestines because the pressure of a move put on his abdominal region. It sounds like Santo previously had surgery scheduled and decided to weave it into the match. He'll be out 45 days.
Oh, that's exactly what I'm sure he did. Listen to this. In Mexico, the pile driver is like a banned move, right? Like if you hit anybody with the pile driver, you immediately get disqualified. And we've done a pretty good job of protecting that move. So Santo, who for all of you guys that don't know, he's the son of the most famous wrestler in the history of Mexico. And at one time he would sell out everywhere. And his dad made all these movies and, you know, he's got a lot of cheese from his dad. But he's also very hard to deal with. You know, when he was in Arena Mexico, he always wanted to win every match. He always wanted to make more money than everybody else. You know, he put all these conditions. And when Místico got hot, they were like, fuck you, Santo. Go fucking kick rocks and fucking, you know. And so he's always talking shit about our promotion. He's always saying that, you know, he can't believe that, you know, that we're promoting violence because against women, because we have matches that are like intergender, like a guy and a girl against a guy and a girl. You know what I'm saying? And that we're promoting violence. Like, yo, motherfucker, it's a wrestling match. It ain't a scene from Saw where we're fucking sawing the bitch's head off and fucking putting it on a fucking totem pole or something. You know what I'm saying? There is no, but he's just like a bitter old dude. But anyways, having said that, let me throw this. So they're trying to set up a mass match between L.A. Park and Dr. Wagner, two of the biggest stars in Mexico and also two of the biggest pains in the ass that I've ever met in my life. And so they want to do a mass versus mass match between these two, which would probably break all sorts of attendance records. And Santo also wants to be in it. So what they did is in Monterey, L.A. Park gave him a pile driver. And listen to this. He says that due to the pile driver, Now he has he had to get abdominal surgery. Imagine that.
Oh, because it squished his body together?
His intestines or some shit. And what the person that just wrote is alluding to is, do you think Santo is going to get surgery on his stomach? And so he invented the pile driver story, of course. But it's such a stupid story. It's almost like, oh, I fractured my elbow, but they're going to operate on my knee, you know, because I needed a knee operation. He should have done something, you know, where Parker hit him with a chair in the fucking abdomen or something, and it fucking cut him, and he had to get it. You know what I'm saying? He had to get surgery. But it's just in Mexico, everybody's making fun of that story because it's like, imagine, you know, tomorrow, I don't know, John Cena got hit with a pile driver and he's saying, oh, now I got to get surgery on my intestines. It's like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Right. It doesn't make sense. But what this person, like I said, is alluding to, is he probably needed the surgery. So he's using that. And it's a terrible excuse. And on top of that, you know, that today, though, they have a picture of Parka, you know, hitting Santo with the pile driver. And he's doing the gimmick where, you know, he's holding him. I think he has him upside down, you know, like Undertaker used to do.
Right.
Not the one where you sit down old school.
The tombstone?
Yeah. Right. And he grabs him around his waist, and you can see the picture when he's landing on his knees, his head never hits the mat. Oops. So people are like, yeah, right. So there's so many fucking holes in that fucking story, and everybody's just having a field day with it.
So but was he just like holding him really tight and like squeezed his intestines?
Well, dude, he's not a jelly donut. I mean, fucking, you know, it's just a stupid excuse. You know what I'm saying? It's just a dumbass excuse from a dumbass bitch. Yeah, I said it, from a dumbass bitch. Hijo del Santo, Conan said that. Boom, hit it.
Hey, Court, why do you think Shelton Benjamin never made it further than he did in WWE? Was it simply because of his poor mic skills? I thought watching him wrestle was more entertaining than listening to John Cena talk. And I'm not a smart mark.
They tried a bunch of different stuff with Shelton before my time, during my time, including adding his mother, which was like one of the most
that was brutal
offensive stereotypes you could do for a character. But that's Vince and WWE for you. He was a guy that I think, you know, was amazing as an athlete, amazing in terms of his in-ring stuff. I thought he was super marketable. I think his background, his story was super good. I mean, he was a great athlete, great amateur wrestler from University of Minneapolis, or Minnesota, I should say. I think he's just a guy that, yeah, he didn't have like the flair and the pizzazz, but I think, you know, if WWE was motivated like they are today with like the Shield, the Wyatt family, to package guys and put them through that star-making machine, You can make a bum a star. I mean, look at Ryback, you know. He's not, like, brilliant. Can't really cut a promo. But you give him enough wins and make him look successful, incredible, anything's possible. It's unfortunate it didn't work out like that, but that's show business, you know. Sometimes you get your breaks. Sometimes timing is everything. And for Shelton, it wasn't. And I guess he's now with New Japan. And from what I've seen over there, he's doing fine. And sometimes guys are just cool with that. That's good. You know, you don't have to deal with the politics. Show up and work, and you work decent-sized houses and go home for 2 or 3 weeks, and that's not a bad deal.
This question is from Dave in Ireland. Hey there, what was the story with Conan's fake teeth that he used to wear on Nitro? Mm. They were like old witch's teeth. He only wore them a few times, but it really cracked me and my brother up. All the best.
You know, those were like those teeth like Ron the Truth Killing used to wear on Raw when he was doing Pretty Ricky.
Right.
You remember that? And just me being a goof, that's it. Boom.
What was with the sunglasses you wore at one point? They like they went up over your skull and went to like the back and wrapped around.
Yeah.
Like, where the fuck did you find those? What were those things? I was fascinated by that.
Those were some cool-ass Oakleys that I have found, I think, in Australia. And they were just exactly how you saw them. They just fucking, instead of going around your head, they went over your head. And they were like connected.
Yeah.
It looked just, dude. If you notice, I also came out once with Rey Mysterio with camouflage and gas mask.
I also
came out another time in prison uniform. So anything that was, you know, I don't know, different, wild, cool, fucking whatever. So Yeah, just me trying to be different.
Those sunglasses were terrific, though. I mean, I remember looking for. I mean, like you. But the thing is, I don't know how many people could have pulled those off. I was hoping Lex Luger was going to wear those with some FUBU.
That would have been awesome.
Well, someone ended up wearing them after you, Conan. Maybe like a year or two later. I can't remember for sure who it was. Maybe it was like Saturn when he went to WWE, or somebody definitely copied you.
Yeah, I saw somebody wear them a couple years later. I don't remember who it was either.
Would WCW reimburse you at all for like expenses as far as ring gear, or if you wanted to wear something flashy to the ring, were you coming out of pocket on everything?
Yeah, well, all that's tax deductible, so you didn't give a fuck. You know what I'm saying? You could buy a million glasses and say they were for work and use them for, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, you could buy shirts and say they were for work and they weren't. You know what I'm saying? So they were all like, they were all business expenses.
This question is from Brent in Tennessee for Conan. I used to work for the TNA office during the days when they had the weekly pay-per-views in Nashville. Do you have any stories you can share regarding coming to the Nashville Fairgrounds each week, besides getting Teabag Tim high on the way to the show? Oftentimes, I heard rumors of Burt Prentice and his advances towards male talent. Do you have any stories about him? I've heard that Abyss's career was advanced by Burt. Any info on that?
Well, I know of at least, and I don't want to burn them because one of them is definitely my friend. Another one isn't, but still. He definitely helped people, and so did Bob Ryder. Boom. Was that necessary? Teabag Tim was that guy. Remember that story I told you about? That I told him that what I was smoking was Iranian tobacco, and I got him super high.
Oh, yeah. Okay, then, that's the guy?
Yeah, just so you know. And I used to have all these names for him. Teabag Tim, Timbaland Tim, TT Boy Tim, which was a porn star. Boom.
Timmy Tim.
I don't think that was one of them.
Timmy.
And Timmy was definitely one of them.
Timmy!
Dude, I mean, the Nashville Fairgrounds, the place was super old. You know, it was basically, imagine what it looked like. The place was a swap meet on the weekends, okay? And it'd been there since the 30s, and it looked like it was made out of wood. And it was at this thing called the Tennessee State Fairgrounds, which the 4 years I was there, I never saw State Fair. So I don't know if that was where they used to hold it or what. And they had this place called White Trash Cafe. And it was where everybody went to eat. It was like across the block. And it was just like Southern food, but, you know, like they would actually serve, you know, I'd never seen this before. They would actually serve drinks like in mason jars, like all sorts of, you know, Southern shit. That was also the site of Teddy Hart and CM Punk coming to blows.
Now, what was you were there for the whole CM Punk Teddy Hart thing?
Yeah.
What instigated those two? Like, tell the story, because I think that's one of the stories that's kind of been lost with time. I mean, Teddy went in his direction and Punk went on and upward and onward. What was Teddy just being Teddy and being a nuisance and Punk was grumpy? What happened?
Well, if you remember that story about Teddy getting thrown out of the locker room in Ring of Honor?
Yes.
Well, there was a lot of heat on Teddy with Samoa Joe, him, you know, AJ Styles, you know, he had a lot of heat with them. So I guess Punk had put on the internet, you know, fuck Teddy Hart, you know, he's not welcome here again. If I ever see him again, I'm going to fucking clean his clock, and just was like basically called them out. So when Teddy got there that day, we were in the fucking at that dirty trash cafe or whatever. And Punk said something to Teddy like, what's up? You know, like almost like, what's up, bitch? So Teddy was like, whatever, you know. And then I don't remember who said, let's go outside, but they went outside. By the time that I actually saw what was happening, Sabu was taking Teddy off of Punk. And Sabu told me that Teddy punched him in the face. And I guess he punched him in the face. And then they, just as they were like really about to get into it, Sabu pulled Teddy off of CM Punk. But I didn't see the actual punch because I was actually coming outside when it happened. I didn't think it was going to happen that quick.
Right, right.
Yeah, I think Teddy might have like punched him first. I don't know if it's a sucker punch or not. But I think he was like, fuck him, before you fucking, you know, attack, I'm going to attack you first.
Well, Teddy, next. I mean, Teddy had fast hands. I don't know what his boxing background was, but I know he definitely had some training.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's what happened there.
Next question. Bo Diaz on Twitter asks, please tell me more about Niño Hamburguesa.
Niño Hamburguesa means hamburger kid. He's this really fat kid, and he's super, super, super over. We actually we had a TV taping in a place called Ecatepec in Mexico, and we made a trio just for kids. It's Niño Hamburguesa, this kid called Atomic Boy, another guy called Alebrije, and he brings a little midget with him called Cuije. And what they did is, coming out to the ring, they threw out candy, had silly string, and they invited all the kids into the ring, and all the kids were jumping, and it was really a fucking cool ass sight. And he in particular is super over because he looks like a little kid. He's probably about 18 years old, and he's fat, obviously, and he's got a ton of charisma, and the people love him. He's one of these guys that doesn't have to do much. And then on top of all that, he throws a tope through the ropes, but with a but in the air when he's throwing the tope, he turns it into a front flip. And I have him coming out eating a hamburger.
Of course.
And then during the match, he'll either leave the hamburger in the corner, or he has it in like a pouch in his fucking gear, and he'll take out the hamburger, he'll take a bite, he'll throw it into the crowd, and that means he's going to hit the tope. And then he hits the tope, and fucking place goes nuts.
He kind of looks like, I just looked him up, he looks kind of like the kid from Modern Family, actually. He's it's not like he looks like Super Porky or anything like that, but I mean, he's a heavy guy, he's that kind of gimmick.
Yeah.
But there's a picture of him flying over the top rope, and he's... Does he wear a t-shirt when he wrestles? Or?
Yeah.
Dude, he's got to show off the fucking love handles. He shouldn't be hiding that, man. That's the money right there.
Yeah. Well, he's still a work in progress.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the kind of act, though. I mean, I haven't seen video, but just looking and hearing, I mean, that would get over in the States. I mean, that's...
As he improves, does he become the cheeseburger kid?
I actually wanted him to come out... I actually wanted him to come out with a guy dressed up as a bottle of ketchup and some other guy dressed up as a pickle.
Oh, I mean, what?
But, as a pickle. And, I don't know why I'm a big fan of all those gimmicks, like a guy dressed in a banana suit where there's just a hole for his face and his arms, or like the one Twinkie the kid wears where it's like, just a hole for his face and his arms, right? And a Twinkie sponge cake fucking gimmick.
I want to make an official declaration to the world that I am officially lobbying to become the catch-up man. I'm throwing my hat in, and I will be aggressively pursuing the catch-up man position.
Will you be moving in front of my house like you did with WWE?
I will be in the process immediately of selling my condo and relocating to the 619. Until I have convinced you that the ketchup bottle, I am the man for the job.
I think you're more of a French fry guy. You should be like a supersized order of French fries.
Like on Adult Swim, where the fries comes out with the hamburger.
Yes, or the milkshake. I could see you in a milkshake gimmick. That's another good one.
Well, my milkshake brings all the boys to the yard. This is an encore from Brenton.
You just buried yourself. What a bag. Go ahead.
This
ranks up there. Let me just say this. That ranks up there when my boy Christopher Daniels goes, yeah, Dirty Sanchez. That's when you stick your finger in your ass and you give yourself a mustache. And I'm like, no, dude, you give it to the bitch. Boom. Go ahead.
Another question from Brenton, Tennessee. This one's for Court. Court, can you share any experiences regarding the WWE Hall of Fame and maybe the inductees that were decided when you were there? What kind of involvement did you have in preparing anything for the event, the lead up, or any insight on this?
You submit a list along with everyone else in the infamous inner circle, and you then are randomly sent an email from Vince's office telling you who's in the Hall of Fame, and you're like, okay, I guess, you see if there's some name that maybe you had that no one else had. You kind of know that's where your input was. Or most of the time, everyone was kind of on the same page with a few different you know, things here and there. I always thought Ali should go in as soon as possible because I wanted him for Detroit because I felt how much longer can you do Muhammad Ali, and he was at WrestleMania and he did have a little bit of a connection to wrestling, you know, with Inoki and then growing up as a fan. I just felt like it wasn't that big of a stretch. I mean, you had fucking Pete Rose in there. And, you know, they never went with that for whatever reason. I mean, that was just Vince. I don't know if he just, you know, maybe Ali wanted money. Maybe he didn't even want Ali in the Hall of Fame. I don't know. And so there was also times when there was just, like, people that we'd see in that memo were like, why the fuck is that person getting into the fucking Hall of Fame? And we had no idea, no rhyme or reason. And it's weird because they really do have carte blanche to pick who they want to induct them a lot of the time. Sometimes Vince will really shoehorn someone and try to push for something, but like Sensational Sherry wanted Ted DiBiase to induct her, and like he didn't know what the fuck to do. I mean, he liked Sherry and everything, but it was like they, you know, they very briefly had a thing at WWE. They briefly had a thing in the early days of Ted's career in Mid-South. I mean, she started quote unquote in the business as like a teenager, hanging around backstage with the boys. And along the way became an actual valet and got in the ring and started working. But she was very friendly with the boys early on in the, I guess, early 80s of Mid-South or Memphis or something like that. And that's how she kind of got into the business. But as for going back to the questions, like, you just never knew who was going to get into the Hall of Fame. Backstage, when you're producing this thing, it's a skeleton crew. I had the honor of participating, and I thought it really was an honor because you got to be around some cool people and see some unique shit. Case in point, I got to be there when Vince met Vern for the first time, maybe ever. And that was when Vern showed up with his son, who was lobbying for a job. And Greg Gagne was a nice enough guy, but you know he didn't give a shit about his dad. He wanted a job when he came back through the backstage area. And I got to see Vince and Vern shake hands, and Vince gave him this big fake hug, and Vern didn't know where the fuck he was. I mean, he was suffering.
Did they have to practice hugs in the hallway?
There was no practice, and Vince just said, Vern's here. He went up there, hey, Vern. Vern literally had, I think he wouldn't know the difference if it was Vince, me, or Big Dick Johnson hugging him. I mean, he had no fucking idea. I mean, unfortunately, his dementia or whatever it was just was too far gone to really know what was really going on. And then it was cool because then Brett came back, and it was the first time Vince and Brett had seeing each other, and like, you know, Hunter's like kind of lurking, kind of watching from afar how that's going down. And I thought that was fascinating. I was like, someone should be filming this. This to me is what you film. This is the fascinating shit. And then I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, can you just make sure Fridge, we're really worried about Fridge. Can you make sure whatever he's going to say doesn't die. And, there's only two writers, and there's two of us and Vince, and everyone else, all the other writers, all the producers, directors, all those fuckers are in the crowd watching and enjoying the show. And I, you know, we were working with Vince, and it was, like I said, a skeleton crew. And I'm sitting there, and Fridge is like in a coma the whole fucking time. And I was a big fan of the Fridge growing up. You know, he played for the Bears and everything. He was a phenomenon in the 80s. And he did WrestleMania 2 or whatever, and so he was going into the Hall of Fame, and he looked like he literally maybe had a stroke. He was like a beached whale, and he was laying on the couch like he had a heat exhaustion. He was just laying with his arms out, kind of like half awake, and I'm like, I'm trying to talk to the guy, but I don't even know if he's fucking listening. Eventually, like, he gets out of this stupor, almost like a Mongo McMichaels-type stupor. And so I was like, all right, what are we doing here? And I said, you know, do you want to go over your promo and your acceptance speech? And he goes, yeah, all right, man. So we went over it, and it sounded okay, nothing great or anything, but I was worried that he was just, the crowd was a hardcore crowd, they were going to kill him because he wasn't like a real wrestler or anything. They were cool with him, and then he actually really brought it. He delivered a hell of a promo and a hell of an acceptance speech for, you know, a guy in his position, so I was really impressed. And then Brett was Brett, and then in the middle of the Hall of Fame deal, Vern has to piss and doesn't really know about commercial breaks or any fucking thing, or doesn't even give a shit, or doesn't, he's just not aware of where he is. He literally gets up and wanders off the fucking set as this is live to tape or live on USA, and we're like, where the fuck did Vern go? And like his son meanwhile is totally distracted trying to get a job. We're all trying to find Vern, and find him in a bathroom, and then get him on before, you know, anyone notices, and the cameras are tight so you don't notice Vern. There's one seat in that, you know, class of eight people that's missing. So you had to be very careful with the shot. But those are just some – that's a little bit of the background, a little snapshot on the Hall of Fame and the process and everything.
Let me throw two things talking about the Hall of Fame that I thought – I was thinking about when you were talking. One is – something that happened with Mike Tyson. I said this like a year ago, but I'm going to say it real quick. Mike Tyson was at this convention that I was at, and he was totally fucked up in the back. And the guy that I brought him told me that he, you know, had been in the hotel smoking kush. And he was really fucked up. He could barely talk or even walk or anything like that. So they brought him into the ring, and Mick Foley was, like, introducing him. And I was telling Tommy Dreamer, bro, I want you to look at Tyson. He's super fucked up back here. There's no way he's going to give him the microphone. So Mick Foley gives him the microphone. I go, oh, my God, this is a train wreck waiting to happen. And he was actually putting over superstar Billy Graham. And he put on a promo that was incredible, dude. And I couldn't believe it because backstage he was super fucked up. But now that you said that refrigerator story, it made me laugh because I went through something similar. And the other thing I wanted to say is, I don't think anybody, dude, should be put in the Hall of Fame if they're not retired. You know what I'm saying? Like, for example, TNA put Kurt Angle in there and the guy's still wrestling.
Right.
Oh. Or they put Sting in there, the guy's still wrestling.
Well, TNA shouldn't have a Hall of Fame because they don't have a long enough history.
I mean, unless if you're going to do it, too, it's like, I mean, Jeff Jarrett, I mean, I think you can make a case.
Needs to go in way before Sting or Kurt Angle.
I mean, it really makes sense. It's funny too, because I remember it's like Vince. One of the things Vince had about the Hall of Fame, he made sure he made it known to everyone that was invited, that was participating, do not thank him, do not put him over. And he didn't say that to be like, you know, this like chivalrous guy. It's like, no, I don't want that. He really didn't think it would get over at all, and it actually would heal them. So yeah. That was a big thing. It literally was written, do not put Vince over.
Right. But yeah, that's one of my peeves. I don't know, has WWE done that?
No, because really, I mean, TNA's been putting in guys that are still active, but I thought WWE, for the most part, anybody recent that's gone in, like that's like a modern guy, they go in as soon as they retire.
Real quick, what do you guys think of Dwight Howard?
It's in his best interest to be in a smaller market. I don't know what his success ultimately will be. I don't know if I ever see him winning a title, maybe, but hey, Mikhail and all those guys are in for it, man, out in Houston.
Like he said, he says, I just bet $30 million that I made the right choice.
Right.
So he did lose $30 million, which must have told you how much bullshit he was going through in L.A. And you know Kobe hated him. It doesn't matter what he says on TV. He hated him, and that's one of the reasons he left out of there. Kobe would have fucking, you know, honed him and put him under his wing and taken care of him. But I also don't think Kobe likes being overshadowed. And you know, he had to share the spotlight with Dwight Howard, whether he liked it or not. And I do think that him going to Houston and learning from Kevin McHale and Hakeem Olajuwon, and they should be able to chill him out. He's got a very young team with him, really young, but he's got some really good players. I don't think they win the championship with him either. He's not a good leader.
This is not Teabag Tim. This is Mailbag Mister. MLW's mailbag is mailbag at MLW.com. Yes.
What's your opinion on the Dwight Howard thing, bitch? It's all three of us.
I think he made the right move for his career. I think that L.A. was very cocky in the sense that they just thought if they traded for him, there was no way that a free agent would ever leave them. He didn't want to go to L.A. He fought it for a while. He didn't want to be there. And they just thought they were so great that even though he didn't want to be there, that if he was there for a year, he would just be charmed by their magical ways. And they made a bonehead move, and now they're going to pay. And
okay, hey, does he win a championship with Houston?
If he stays there long enough, I could see Houston winning a title in the next 5 years. I don't see them winning it in the next 2 years. But I mean, when it's all said and done, does he get a ring there? Yeah, I mean, I think it's likely.
I'll tell you what, man. And we picked, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I think we all picked Oklahoma in the West. But like you had even said, we got to still see how trades work out. Let me tell you one thing. Golden State is in the mix like a motherfucker with Iguodala, whatever his fucking name is. That motherfucker's awesome.
And I think Clippers still have something. I think, you know, depending on how it works out with Doc over there, Doc.
He's a great coach.
Doc, I mean, like, that changes everything. And you gotta look at that team totally different because Vinny Del Negro was the shits. And now they have a real good coach. So I'm very interested to see how they do. But what were you talking about? You started asking the question. And you kept saying the word teabag, and then Conan interrupted. What the fuck are you talking about, teabag? Teabag what?
No, I am not teabag, Tim. I am mailbag, mister. And I wanted to remind everyone that mailbag at MLW.com is the way to get their
the guy from TNA. What the fuck you
The guy that smoked Iranian tobacco.
Why the fuck was he called Teabag Tim? Did he get teabagged? What the fuck happened?
No, because I gave him all these nicknames. One of them was Teabag Tim. The other one, Timbaland Tim. The other one was TT Boy, who's
one
a fucking
of them
porno
was
star.
Tim.
No, one of them was Tema. And so that's just names that I gave this motherfucker. But he's the guy that I was smoking some fucking pot, and I go, this is Iranian tobacco. He'd never smoked pot before. So he was super fucked up. And they were like, is something wrong with you? He goes, no, man, no. He goes, are you sure? He goes, yeah, no, I just smoked some Iranian tobacco with Conan. And Jeff was like, yeah, okay, just Iranian tobacco. I know exactly what you just smoked, you know. And so that became like a running joke in the fuck TNA.
Now, let me ask you this question. You know, there's the guy that won't shut up when you smoke with him. And then there's the guy becomes super annoying and, like, it's just not fun to be around when that shit goes down. Who is the guy, your favorite guy, who's the guy that won't shut up, that will go on for 2 years talking, and then who's the most annoying guy to get high with?
The one that talks the most that I can remember, again, man, I hate to bust his nuts, Teddy. And he would probably also fall under the annoying, but just so we can get another name in there, my boy Abyss ain't afraid to talk. He'll talk it up. He's a good guy, though. Let me tell you, man, there's a lot of people that smoke that shit that nobody knows about, and they keep it under wraps big time, a lot more than you would think. Let me just say that.
Yeah.
And they always somehow, I don't know if they feel they need to, or it's just like fucking, you know, stoner's law or what, but they always feel they need to come and reveal themselves to me and say, look, you know, don't tell nobody, but, you know, and I got some, if you ever need anybody, you know, let's go to the car. And they're really like, you know what I'm saying? They just don't want their shit to be busted.
You're like the guru, man.
Well, I mean, that's, it's funny because Alex Greenfield used to always say, it's like, you know, waving the flag or something. He had a very awkward way of putting it, but he said, you know, when he first came to the office, he was dying to find someone to smoke weed with him, and he, like, pretty much tried to, like, introduce it into every conversation with everyone he met on the writing team until he found that guy that said, okay, let's go down to the parking lot during lunch, and we'll, you know.
And writers are not drug tested, correct?
No, not drug tested, nothing. No testing going on, not even when you're hired.
One thing, it's kind of funny. If you look at the AAA website or wherever you looked up Niño Hamburguesa, there's a group called La Secta, which means the sect. See if you find them real quick.
I hope I don't spell this wrong, because if I do, I'm going to find, like, really strange porn.
S-E-C-T-A, and the first word obviously is La Secta.
I'm on the Lucha Libre AAA.com roster. La Secta Bizarra?
Yeah.
Alright. And, alright, I see the whole crew there.
Oh, I hear the clicking. Cord is ready.
How many guys are in there?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Okay, well, there's three of them that kind of look like that. There's three of them that have, like, black hair and have painted face, and they have, like, the same gimmick.
Yeah.
That's La Secta. Dude, when I first came to AAA, I was like, oh, it's on. I know these three fucking motherfuckers are smoking all sorts of pot. None of them. Can you believe that?
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe they're just faving you.
No, oh, no, no, there's no, dude, they can't do that. I'll find out, you know,
and they'll be gone.
That's no. It's just that's something, it's hard to explain unless you're a pothead, but there's like, you know how they say honor among thieves? There's kind of honor among potheads where, like, if you have some, you always want to share, you know what I'm saying? And if you have some, you want to let somebody know. So you kind of know somebody you can smoke with. You know what I'm saying?
I wish we had that same honor amongst people that like shrimp and lobster. That would be great.
Yeah. Well, but like I said, Jesus. So there's you know what I'm saying? So there's like a lot of honor between potheads in that sense. You know, they would tell me for sure and they'd be happy. They'd be like, good, here's another guy that's part of the clique. And if we don't have some, we could probably ask him. You know what I'm saying? So there's really no benefit except the fact that nobody ever find out that you smoke pot and you can't get stooged on. That's about the only benefit of kayfabing somebody.
Conan, yeah. we've had a few fans ask about Samurai Del Sol, who has reportedly signed with WWE, and people want to know your thoughts, where you see him in the next 2-3 years. Do you think he's going to be the new hot high flyer there?
He's super talented. He could be the next Rey Mysterio. His promo skills are really bad in Spanish and English, but he is bilingual. But I think he could be the guy to take over. But we'll see. You know, there's a lot of things. Does he get nervous on TV? Will they fuck with him politically? All those things that we've seen other people fall under. But talent-wise, he's definitely the goods.
We also had a few people write in about Triple Mania and there being a lot of chair shots to the head.
Right.
And wanting to know your thoughts and Triple A's thoughts on that, because I know there's some companies that won't allow it anymore.
We've had, like, really no problems whatsoever so far. And it's kind of funny. I don't know why in triple, like in Mexico, you don't see so many drug related deaths like you see in the United States, or we haven't, you know, there hasn't, obviously since they don't play professional football in Mexico, but there hasn't been the rage and
scrutiny on the concussions and stuff.
Yeah. And all that, like there's been in the United States, because in soccer, like nobody's really getting concussions, and that's really the biggest sport there. So it's not really that big of a deal. And Mexicans are a little bit more bloodthirsty than their American counterpart, and they're a little bit more used to the product being risque because that's what we've educated them to. So there's nothing, as far as the fans and even the media, we get zero heat on that. My personal feeling is that we probably will have to get rid of that, because there is sufficient evidence that there's long-term problems from getting repeatedly hit in the fucking head, whether it's a fist or a chair or whatever it is.
Yeah, well, my biggest thing, if I was promoting, would be like, if I have a successful company in like 15, 20 years, if it's still around, these guys are going to come back and sue me because they have, you know, early onset dementia or some weird shit that they're gonna put me on.
And definitely we think about that, but we've been around for 21 years, and believe me, we've done way more chair shots than WWE can even think about, and we haven't had that problem. You know what I'm saying? But still, it is something that needs to be stopped.
This fan asks, with the 2014 expansion, will AAA have people scouting talent in the U.S. like the WWE does?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Will they be looking at Saint Laurent?
Oh shit!
I'm gonna tell you what I should have told you last time. Saint Laurent, I've never in my life seen him as a manager. I've never in my life heard him as a commentator. And I did see him do one time. He sent me a promo, which was pretty good. But other than that, I don't know what his work is like. And just me talking to him for 2 years on a podcast doesn't tell me how he's gonna fucking is gonna project on a fucking wrestling thing in a wrestling arena, show, ring, whatever you want to call it. So he'll be just like anybody else. You know, it'll be like, okay, what is it that you want to do? You want to try out for commentator? You want to try out for manager?
I think it was a baker. So, I mean, all you really have to do is really just be able to knock the shit out of someone with a rolling pin.
Yeah, I mean, well, like, come on. So whatever it is that he wants to do, obviously I will get him the opportunity. He doesn't have to go around and figure out who's going to get him in. I'll give him that opportunity, and then you just go in there and you shine, dude. That's really it. I don't hire people. I mean, I recommend people, and I can tell the people I work for, I can say, look, I have a lot of faith in this guy. I want you to take a look at him, and they will do that without trying to sound vainglorious, I have a pretty good track record with talent. And they trust me a lot in that. So I'll be able to get you to the front, and whatever you tell me, I want to commentate, I want to manage, I want to try to do both, I'll get you a tryout doing both.
I think the baker, the French-Canadian baker, and the Hamburger Kid could be the greatest tag team in the history of AAA.
Wow, the French Canadian Baker, or the French, or what is it that has the Canadian bacon, the Egg McMuffin, right? The Egg McMuffin and the Hamburger Kid could be a pretty good tag team.
I've always wanted to be a muffin.
Oh God! Jesus Christ! What would the Spanish name of the extra value meal or something like that, the super value meal or something? There has to be some sort of McDonald's name that you could do in Spanish and sound good for them.
I don't know. I try not to buy any food in Mexico if I can. but no, there was one that he just said not too long ago that I was like, wow, that's awesome. Where's the one that – what's the one MSL just said that I related it to Chris Daniels? I referenced Riff Daniels.
Oh, the milkshake?
Oh. That's awesome, bro. That's a verbal gem, without a doubt.
The Hamburger Kid comes out, and he has his music. And then all of a sudden, you think the match is about to start, and that song starts. And then you see Saint Laurent in a big milkshake outfit jiggling to the ring, grinding the ropes and shit.
Right, and he comes out, and he's also – because what we'll do is we will call it the super value meal. It's a hamburger, a shake, and a Twinkie. Cole Cabana come out as a Twinkie Kid. During the match, something happens and the Yetai appears. But the Yetai has just come from her dwelling. So she's got like mountain dirt on her.
Cravings.
She's got probably like an Alaskan pike in one paw and maybe small game remnants in another paw. And as she comes in, M, not sure what has just entered the ring, spears her. Okay? Cole Cabana gets mad. He starts putting the boots to fucking M. M throws him to the ropes and he spears fucking Colt. But Colt, just a lot of sponge and shit comes out. You know what I'm saying? He's announced the winner. Christy Hammy comes in, announces the wrong winner. So he backs her up into the corner, puts his nutsack in her mouth, and he goes, boom, bitch. Austin Aries comes out, which gets a huge pop. Bruce Pritchard comes out, and he says, you have to apologize to her, much like Austin had to apologize to Christy Hammy, right? He gives Bruce Pritchard a golden dragon, and everybody from Aces and Eights gives him a golden shower. And by the way, I've also thought that there needs to be a group in TNA to fight Aces and Eights, which would be called Aces and Indians. And the leader of this group would be Johnny Ace. Huh. And in the group would be Tatanka, Sanjay Dutt, who is the other Indian that I'm thinking? Oh, the guy from Kali. The other guy, the Indian guy from Three Man Band, what's his name?
Oh, Jinder Mahal.
Jinder Mahal.
Can I be Jinder Mahal?
And that'll be the Aces and Indians.
I love it. I love it. That group.
That would be that's a Survivor Series match.
Yeah.
And I like the trios of Colt and
yeah, and you
Hamburger
get a little
Kid.
Bit of everything.
Oh my God.
Yeah. You get the Twinkie, right?
Right.
And you get the fucking shake. You get the hamburger, right?
Right.
You get a little bit of everything. And if you want a fruit, you can put Disco Inferno in there. Boom.
Conan's fantasy bookings got me so fired up that, Conan, I just sent you a promo of mine.
Okay.
To show you that I've got the skills to pull off the ketchup
bottle. Show me the good stuff.
He's working every angle.
Okay, please tell me you said I got to hear this and I'd like to hear it on the air. You said that M couldn't be on the podcast tomorrow because he's teaching a class. What class is this?
I've been hired by a wrestling school to teach a promo class.
A promo class. What is a wrestling school called?
It is called the Team Vision Dojo.
They also check your eyesight.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Is that?
Strip mall.
The kids think they're going to be reciting promos, but the script is actually just an eye chart.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's fucking awesome.
My night will be easy.
That'll be awesome. Well, anyways, guys, I think we've spoken about a plethora of subjects.
Yes.
Conan, did you know that there are now multiple fake MSL Twitter accounts?
No. But I did see a Twitter that you sent that said half of Vince McMahon's followers are fake.
Yes.
What does that mean? That he bought them or what?
Probably, yes.
Or, wow. I mean, do you think he bought them? Do you think WWE bought them? Or do you think WWE, same thing, but what I'm saying is, do you think someone's just fucking around and wanted to fuck with, you know, an account?
Well, like no, because to have like 150,000 fake followers would be expensive.
Yeah,
That's not some fan goofing around. I mean, some fan tomorrow to make me look bad could go buy me 500 fake followers. But, you know, but to go buy 150,000, that's not someone goofing around.
And the funny thing is that, and I'm sure you guys have all read it, they were talking about like Kim Kardashian, Justin Bieber, all these big superstars where they had bought all these followers themselves or maybe their publicity company. But I don't know, why would you want fake fans following you?
The media is easily manipulated by it. They see some singer that, oh, they must be a big deal. They've got a million followers, not realizing 80% of them are fake.
But now won't they think, well, he might have bought them?
If people are savvy enough to start auditing Twitters. I also audited the Twitter for Tout, which is the service that WWE owns, and half of those are fake as well.
Oh, really? How do you audit them?
There's different websites. I think one of them is twitteraudit.com, but there's a bunch of them.
And ironically, all my followers are fake, so there's that.
So this is Vince McMahon, like not that guy, that cranky Vince guy.
No, the actual Vince account.
Whatever happened to cranky Vince?
He's back, man, with a vengeance.
Is it still JBL?
I mean, unless he like handed the gimmick off to somebody, which but if he did, there'd be no way for me to know it.
But what do you think? You went CSI on this bitch.
I think
it's
still him.
Law and order and everything, huh?
I think it's still him. And here's the thing. Like, I'm a JBL fan, and I'm a cranky fan. Right. I think it's brilliant. Like, he should be very proud of, like, literally thousands of humorous tweets at this point. I don't think that there's anyone that could, like, step in and be as good as the original cranky. So I think it's still him.
I just would imagine it'd be very hard to keep that. If he, you know, if there's tweets on like a Monday night, it would be very hard to be JBL because he's sitting right there, cameras everywhere, writing crazy shit. That's the biggest, I think, problem
now,
with the theory.
Let me ask you a question, M, that because you read his tweets, do you think that there's a possibility that he told Vince, look, I'm going to do this as a gag, and Vince is like, go ahead and do it? Or does he say shit that will really get him heat?
Oh, no, there's no way Vince would approve of this stuff. Like, the stuff I saw.
Yeah. And they've, WWE, I mean, I don't know all the details, but I believe they've spent a lot of time and effort trying to find out who it is and threatening
why
legal action. And
anyone that has any notoriety is going to have this kind of shit. I'm sure Kim Kardashian
including
has
me
million.
Now.
What?
Including me now.
So how many? Okay, you asked me if I knew that somebody had a fake MSL tweet or tweet, whatever, and I was like, no. So how many people exactly are there?
How many fake MSL accounts are there?
Yeah,
I've discovered two so far, or MLW found them, or whatever.
And what are they? And like, are they being dicks? Are they cool? Or what's the deal?
One of them like photoshopped a picture of me smoking weed, which I actually thought was pretty funny.
Right.
And then the other one just like, we'll talk about like WWE. That one I don't understand.
Because I had one guy right before this was the main reason I got on Twitter. There was some guy that was actually impersonating me. You know, I was hearing wrestlers telling me, hey, man, I sent you a tweet and you fucking didn't get back. I was like, dude, I don't even know how to fucking work on that shit. I don't know how you work it. And then I finally got on there to see. And he'd be talking to bitches that I'd never met before. Like, for example, I remember once, what was that girl's name? Maria Canales.
Yeah.
And he was like, hey, man, how you doing? You know, it's K-Dog. And I'm like, I've never even met this bitch. You know, she's probably reading this and going, what a fucking pervert scumbag. Or you know what I'm saying?
Well, she didn't know that yet about you, but you're assuming. Yeah.
Right. But still, it doesn't. But you know what I'm saying? And so he was talking to people as if he was me. And he wasn't really rude, but he was saying shit that I would never say. And I was like, well, fuck it. And so our boy from Mass Republic, Kevin Kleinrock, I don't know how
hey,
he
boyfriend.
Did it.
Yeah, I mean, you've had some shit, but yeah, I mean, that's it's weird too how like they verify random accounts, and like yours to me was like one of those that's being impersonated. They should have just given you the verification. That to me is all marketing, though. It's like they want, you know, the whole thing is about, you know, being verified, which is, you know, it's a form of gratification, and then you got, you know, followers, and you know, here people are, it's become currency. People are buying followers. So I mean, it's a weird thing that Twitter's been, I don't think they make any money, but it's also just part of their marketing thing to get people obsessed about their product.
I'm looking at one of the Thunderbolt Ginger accounts right now that within the last hour or two while we've been on the line, they just started tweeting like crazy. Like they tweeted MVP, they're tweeting Triple H and all these people as if it's really me. But they've just changed their at THNDR Bolt Ginger. This is the one and only Saint Laurent. I'm a douchebag wrestling know-it-all. So this guy must be a big fan.
Yeah, must be.
Yeah, I just want to give two shout-outs. First to Cass Gregg, who tweeted us a picture of a poster he made that had Cult Loves Yetai.
Awesome.
And yeah, I think you saw this, Conan, with a picture of Colt with these big-ass honky-tonk man hair with the sideburns. And then there's...
You know, you should put it on Twitter so they can see it.
Oh, we retweeted it. And there's a seductive picture of Isis who's, you know, got the come-hither look.
Right.
So that was pretty cool. And I also want to give a shout-out...
And tell him what Colt said, because he actually saw it.
Yeah, he kind of acknowledged it. He kind of just gave it like the, cool, or what, I don't know what, something like that.
You know, he said, yeah, it's true, I do love her.
And then David Scott on Twitter hit us with a great video where you apparently smoked the ashes, allegedly, of AAA founder Antonio Pena with a Persian bong.
Right, boom.
Which we'll put up that video on Facebook.com/Major League Wrestling for everyone to see and enjoy Conan.
Excellent video.
Just enjoying the remnants
ashes of the founder of AAA.
Yeah, and this is a real ass Persian bond.
Yeah, I mean, water pipe. Thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's the real deal. So, I want to definitely thank those people for sending that. And then just to follow up, like, where are you at with the M7 diet now? Are you in the mix with this thing? Are you getting ready for it? Where are you at with it?
I'm not you,
Ginger. I'm talking to Conan. Jesus Christ.
He was just talking about all the food he ate.
Well, you just want to put yourself over. You got your fake Twitter accounts. You got fucking...
Listen, I'm a wrestling douche know-it-all.
Exactly.
I started it yesterday. The only thing that, you know, because diet sounds awesome and it sounds very logical. The only thing is I don't know how you go without no carbohydrates. I don't understand that. First of all, it's not healthy for you. And two, how do you have any energy for when you play basketball if you have no carbs in your diet?
Well, you're still getting some carbs from the fruits and vegetables.
Right.
And I have so much excess fat that I'm burning that for energy. You know, when I'm sleeping, I'm burning all that. I wake up with energy and, you know, if I ever got in good shape, I would have to go off the diet and add some carbs. But for now, you know, I want to live off that belly fat and get rid of it.
Right. Okay. Can you eat popcorn or no?
I know some people that do, with the idea that corn is a vegetable and therefore it's really I mean, I don't think it's that bad of a snack. I personally don't, because I try to really focus on fruits and vegetables for snacks. But I mean, if popcorn is going to make the difference between you being able to stick to it or not, then I say go for it.
Yeah, because when I used to box and I had to lose weight, I've never been on a diet in my life, like a real diet. But, you know, I had to lose weight when I used to box. And one of the ways I used to lose weight was I used to eat popcorn at night. And then I used to get a bag of crushed ice and just suck the water from the ice. So, you know, at night, obviously, when I'm in Iran, obviously you do get the serious munchies. And so, you know, I want to eat popcorn and some ice. But the main thing, the only thing is I probably got to put a little bit of carbs in my diet at the beginning, because I am going to need some, because you're eating simple carbs. I'm going to need some complex carbs like in the beginning of the day so I can have some energy when I start working out, because I'm going to do the diet for like 2 weeks. Then after about 2 weeks, I'm going to do diet and start working out again. And but that's basically about it. You know, I am starting his diet. I started it yesterday.
Well, we're going to have updates. We're going to see before and after pictures of you and, of course, here, Thunderbolt Ginger. Thunderbolt, how much have you lost now?
I'm down 72.
Congratulations, man. And 3 months, right?
Yep. Yeah.
That's fucking awesome. Yeah, that's fucking awesome, man.
I mean, if I'm going to fit into that ketchup bottle, I got to slim down.
That's true.
Milkshake,
that's true.
Milkshake, come on.
The milkshake, yeah. Think milkshake. You know?
All right. You know what? Let's do a contest. Send us in your MSL Milkshake and Nino Hammer Gay Safe Photoshop picks. Best one gets an MLW DVD. Hopefully you're inspired by that. Hopefully it's a quality prize for you. If not, I'm sorry, but if it is, mailbag at MLW.com is the place to send those pictures, or tweet them at MLW. And with that, we're donezo for the day, but the conversation doesn't stop here. Hit us with feedback, milkshake, pics of St. Laurent, obscure pics of Conan wearing, hideous fashion from tiger print to mango, or just make fun of my name. Facebook.com/Major League Wrestling is the place to bounce your shit with other listeners about each and every show. And follow us on Twitter. I'm at Court Bauer. He's at Conan5150. And MSL Universe is where you can find the slimmed down strawberry milkshake himself. We're back next week, but in the meantime, don't forget to jump back on here Friday for a new Bauer and Pollock show. And until then, enjoy this milkshake courtesy of Thunderbolt Ginger himself, a little strawberry flavored milkshake just for you. See ya.
Get it.
Well, my milkshake brings all the boys to the yard. Well, my milkshake brings all the boys to the yard. Milkshake brings all the boys to the yard. And their life is better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I could teach you, but I have to charge. Well, my milkshake brings all the boys to the yard. I've always wanted to be a muffin.
If you're smart, you're lying, na 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 na, you're lying, na 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 na.
Well, my milkshake brings all the boys to the yard. Well, my milkshake brings all the boys to the yard. To be a muffin. Well, my milkshake brings all the boys to the yard. Well, my milkshake brings all the boys to the yard.
again. I can't think right now. I think I'm so fucking high. I can't remember shit. We'll have go to the next one.